One thing is for sure. The Red Bull.
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 Welcome to episode 157 of the EDSS Review Show, where we review the latest and greatest of the only media of the Red Bull, the energy drink soccer show. Once again, joining us for the 157th time is Brent, Peaches, Sam, and Cork. How are you gentlemen doing?
Good. I think this is me only coming on for like 20th time or whatever, but I appreciate the sentiment.
It's 157th in heart of the, you have reviewed the energy drink soccer show 157.
Yeah. Ever since I've been on the show, it's been like, yeah, talking bad for the energy drink soccer show.
So, talking bad. Was there a Breaking Bad one of those too?
Yeah, I think that was the first one. Or maybe I'm getting that wrong. Maybe it's only been Talking Dead, but there's definitely like a post show Breaking Bad show that kind of like pioneered that thing.
Yeah.
I think AMC did one for like every show. There might have been a Talking Men one too.
Talking
Men? Oh my God.
Chat Men. Yeah.
Well, is that just a podcast? But yeah, and this is inspiring me now. I need to make some more content that, based on all of those Breaking Bad memes, that, you know, we're just like the show villain, the actual villain, where it's just BMS and BMS on both sides.
BMS in different outfits.
Or it's two different photos of Ben Mines, but you're not sure which one was referring to Ben Mines and which one is referring to Ben Mines. But all right, well, it's a special episode. It's the Peach's birthday episode. It's Peach's birthday. You're old now.
I am.
I'm 27. What have you done in 20s? What part of your body hurts now?
My left knee, and I don't think it'll ever get better now. I think that's how bodies work, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the beginning of going to the doctor, and they're just like, well, I don't know what to tell you. That's great. I'm glad you shared that with me. And that's it. Then they charge you money. But I have a confession. I've been seeing a lot of the posts going around, you know, people doing the extra mile and doing these big Zoom parties or Zoom surprise parties or like Zoom weddings and getting everyone's extended family and long lost lovers and, you know, long lost adopted families together and just having these beautiful heartrending moments. So I admit it. I'm sorry. I did the MLS's back tournament for Peaches' birthday. It was my idea. It was my fault.
You hired all the MLS players and coaches on Cameo to show up in Orlando.
Yeah, the rates are not what you think they would be.
I mean, when you buy in bulk, yeah. Like.
I appreciated you throwing in the five substitution thing. That was very nice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, you can get a lot if you were just the last one to stay awake at the CBA negotiations. You'd be shocked what you can shove in there. And this time it was the MLS's back birthday party bash presented by Peaches. Presented for Peaches.
By and for.
Yeah. By Mark Jacobs for Mark Jacobs for Peaches. But the Rebels won. I'm so sorry. The Red Bull won.
The Red Bull.
The Red Bull. The Red Bull. So I sort of watched this game. I was on psychedelics during it. So it was already a little surreal. Do you guys want to tell me about this game?
I don't remember anything about this game, if I'm totally honest. I just remember being glad that we beat Atlanta.
You know, I simultaneously don't remember it, but I do. I also feel like I do remember all 20 minutes that I watched in searing detail. But that's it. I can only really watch 20 minutes. I will say the screen there with like the zooming in, like the fans zooming in on the screen, and the crowd noise, slightly upsetting. And it being dark when it was not dark where I was. I know that's not a COVID thing, but time zones in general, just upsetting. It was weird, but in hindsight, there was no other way. Obviously, the Red Bull is the most suited to a surreal, dystopian transcendence of sport. This is our home turf in a way, right?
It really does feel like a lot more appropriate as each moment goes by. It really does like feel like this is something that we're meant to do well in. Yeah. Like it's written in the stars.
I was only sort of joking when I said the EDSS review thing, because one of the ones, the B squad, we're the 2 squad for EDSS. There's the 202 squad, and then there's the B squad, which is the 2 wands and Pat. One of the wands was saying that it was a great time. It was an even better win for us because we didn't actually have to be there in person. We were all able to stay home and post. And you know, I wholeheartedly agree. I think no better fan base, no better attitude than us over the last 2 years to really milk all of this for the goodwill that it produced, I think.
I was going to say that our boys looked fit, but really our posting is pretty, I think everyone's been training in the off season.
Yeah,
I think it was just a natural culmination, but yeah, go on.
No, I think at RBA, like if whenever we do get back to having home games, hopefully soon, RBA, like the entire stand should just be like a press box. Everybody should have like a ledge to put their laptop on so they can be posting while attending the match.
Like, yeah,
that should be the post COVID future for the Red Bull.
And everyone's going to have
installed stadium Wi-Fi.
Yeah, ahead of their time. And we're going to have safe standing is actually just going to be everyone's going to be given a piece of chalk to draw a 6-foot circle around them. And then everyone can, that will be everyone's in autonomous posting zone. new capacity, I don't know what, 12,000, 10,000, but everyone's got a 6-foot bubble to themselves.
Yeah. The engagement is going to be through the roof.
Oh, yeah. Which is really what matters.
That's the real table.
Yeah. I forgot what I was going to say, but yeah, Cork. So you wrote up a column about our 1-0 victory over Atlanta. And I think the tag that you used when you posted it was that the vibe is weirdly good.
Yeah.
I think I agree, but why do you think this vibe is so good?
It was kind of like, of course, it's always good to beat a rival. I mean, you know, I don't want to give them too much credit, but, you know, Atlanta is certainly... Who's got the train in the background? That feels very, very
on. Oh, shit, that's me. I forget. I didn't realize it came through so closely.
I love that.
Yeah, that's...
Like, I'm going to keep it.
It's very on brand.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah. But, not to give them too... And it fits with discussing Atlanta because, you know, it's the terminus. Da-da-da-da-da.
Anyway. Jesus.
But anyway,
also trains.
Trains are canceled now.
Yeah.
Okay. Now they're uncanceled. That now that we've that's the namesake. But sorry, as you're saying.
But Atlanta have become pesky little rivals of ours. Our little brother team, as you know, everybody thinks of them, and they it's always nice to beat them. It's always nice to get a result against them. The game was a little bit chippy too. I mean, it was definitely like both teams seemed to be into it. It was less of some of the kind of like preseason factor that I've seen in other games so far this month. But so there's that. You know, pretty emotional game, pretty big game to win. And then also just kind of like we a little bit of what you were just saying, Britt, about how this kind of is more and more cosmically feeling like a tournament that we should do well in, and it would be fun to do well in. So that adds to the vibe a little bit. And it's just, it feels like more so than the games, the couple games that we played in March, it feels more like the official kickoff of the new era of the team under some new technical leadership. You know, Kevin Thelwell was brought in early February. So he had a few weeks to, you know, before the game started, but it wasn't necessarily, he wasn't putting a visible stamp on the team yet. His first like official signing, Jason Pendant, did not happen until basically like the day before COVID happened. So he didn't play a game until now. Egbo hasn't played a first team game. He still hasn't played a first game yet. But anyway, he's another guy who had to kind of wait to get his launch. And and actually the night before the game was Thelwell's first media availability, his first press conference, where people got a chance to really hear from him and hear what his thoughts were, hear why he's at the club. And you know, a lot of what he said made a lot of sense about his long-term plans. So there was that kind of hanging over the game as far as just hearing from the man behind the curtain for the first time in a long time. Just a lot of things kind of converging to, have what are kind of, quietly good vibes kind of building up. It feels, I kind of got at this in the column, how with Thelwell coming in, and it was kind of noticeable for a lot of people watching the game the other night that along with all the coaches and trainers, that Natasha Patel, the new video analyst, was on the bench and working with the coaches the whole time. And it feels a lot more like there is kind of a committee of management at the club after last year, where we saw kind of Armis and Hamlet left in somewhat of a caretaker role after Jesse had left. And that was good enough to get through the rest of 2018 when the team was already chugging. But then when it came time to sort of start, molting and creating new versions of the team last year and keeping the standards high, they seemed to not have the full tool set that they needed to do it. Just, it still remains to be seen whether Armis and Hamlet will be worth keeping around in this new setup, but certainly in the old setup was not fitting to their strengths. So, it just generally feels like even if all that's going on right now is that this is just a slightly improved version of the setup that we had last year, that's still good. That's still an improvement. And, the best case scenario of what we're seeing the beginning of right now is that it is a new team with a new vision that we're moving into a transition era. And hopefully that's a sign of good things. What are we laughing about in the background?
I'm afraid to ask. Who even watched
Peaches? What happened?
I don't know.
Okay. I just got my door open. It threw me off like quite a bit at the end of my speech just there, but okay.
Was it the Red Bull?
It was
the Red Bull.
Yeah,
I fucking knew it. It's that freaking Red Bull, man.
He will never die. He will always be.
He's dancing. I definitely had a phase. One of my many phases of quarantine was rewatching some of the match days from 2018, the match day videos. Mm-hmm. I guess it was the self harm phase. I have to say, this reminds me, because looking at those, I think, and being given the extra distance of like soccer not happening and it feeling more isolated and not immediate, I think that Chris Armas and Dennis Hamlett were better, like, were literally better managers in 2018. If you, like, look at their presence in the videos and what they're doing and how they're managing guys and what they're talking about and how they're interacting with staff, I think that in a certain sense that, like, Chris Armas was a better manager in 2018, not only because he had a project in momentum, but I think because he was able to, like, being in an environment around people. And I think if you view management or just like job performance in general, or just behavior in general, is really more a product of like things you do and habits rather than like some sort of innate character, I think it makes sense that Armas, I think, really did do better as a manager in 18 with that kind of support, as opposed to 19, he has none of that. And watching him try to like fabricate it entirely all himself was extremely painful as we've beaten into the ground. So I think I'm on a similar page where it makes sense to me that if they build out some of the infrastructure around him, that he could do a better job, because I guess the previous narrative maybe around Armas and the frustrations was that he was kind of handed something that was already driving well. And I think that may be short-selling him a little bit. Like maybe he did have some like good effect on it, but it was still because of that context, and maybe he could be pushed more in that direction again. I don't know, but I'm feeling similarly. Sam, Peaches, what about you guys?
I mean, I think the one thing that sticks out in like 2018 is that around the vibe I guess for some reason I'm just thinking about there's that one podcast with Benny Fellhaber and Sal Zizzo where they they're talking with Aaron Long, and they just talk about how like you know, Chris is like such a like, he's so real. And I feel like in 2018 like there's like that kind of like feeling around Chris where it's like, you know, like, yeah, like, you know, he can kind of do it, and like he's trying and he's stumbling, but everyone's kind of supporting him and like kind of rallying behind him. And I just feel like that feeling was lost, and at least it was displayed, and so, you know, it wasn't displayed at all to the fans in any sense. And I think it's just a total different feeling that we got around that, because even if he was like so real or like a good guy, it just seemed like that clearly wasn't enough. But you're exactly right that, you know, there's kind of these larger forces that are helping prop him up to allow him to do his job, which is a good side of things now. You know, it's hard to like look into it too far with just one game, you know, albeit a good game. You know, a sign of, you know, I think drawing back to like the elements that made us a good team in 2018, like, you know, the possession stats, I think, really stuck out as a change of pace. But I don't know, I'm hopeful that, you know, we kind of get that feeling of 2018 back a little bit, that allows Chris to be a better manager. I mean, I think we're all really hard on him, you know, hopefully with a robust staff supporting him. You know, I think we can even, you know, kind of revisit our thoughts on him as a manager.
Yeah, kind of like you were just saying there, Sam, like, and that was kind of what I was thinking a minute ago, where like the fact that like a lot of the players seem to love him, like, you know, gives him a bit more of a leash than he might even have, you know, as critical as we've been. You know, he does, you know, there's obviously been a few guys who he hasn't seen eye to eye with, you know, maybe more so than other managers who've been here, but he definitely seems to be somebody who, you know, most people seem to like to work for, and nobody really has bad things to say about even necessarily. You know, everybody wants to see him do well, and you know, yeah, I mean, is that going to still be enough going forward? Is, you know, it is just one game, you know, we'll see, but yeah, for now, if he is going to be here, it would be nice to see him in the best situation he could possibly be, and that's what it kind of looks like, you know, in this first sample we got the other night.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that the team kind of looked just really good in general. Like, everyone was working together better than I've seen in a while. And, you know, it kind of felt like what we were talking about at the beginning of the season, where, you know, maybe it is kind of a turnaround. And I don't know. It just, like, it felt that way until Chris got to his fourth and fifth sub, but, you know.
The curse of five subs. Jeez. Thanks, Peaches.
Well, look, this is the proving point between good and bad managers, I guess.
Yeah, what you do with that fourth and fifth sub. I've got I'm sensing some discomfort with the Armas is fine vibes here. So I've got a little bit of cold water to pour on it. Is that I will say that I was reintroduced to a feeling I hadn't had in a while when I saw Bradley Wright Phillips in a black jersey scoring a goal.
Right.
That made me feel a certain kind of way. That, because like with the other big departures, I guess, were really the fullbacks, Kemar and Murillo, which I think, you know, Kemar was a professional and showed up for the whole season, and being able to get him, get a solid chunk of transfer cash and get him to a decent club was good, was all right, I guess, even though it was kind of painful at the time. Murillo, obviously, as we've outlined on here and in writing on Once in Metro, but this kind of just like emblematic of everything wrong with last season. But even then, at least being, we were at least able to sell him to the same club also for a couple million dollars. So now that it's past us, you can kind of just, you know, close your eyes and say, whatever, at least it's done. But the BWP thing still hurt, because watching him go out there and score a goal, and like, yeah, that doesn't mean he's going to score 20 this season, or he would have scored 20 this season or whatever. It's still just painful that like, whoever was in charge, or indeed wasn't in charge, couldn't just like manage their relationship with him to keep him around. Is still going to be kind of a sore spot for me and a black mark on their management. I don't know how that happened, and it looks unlikely that we'll ever get any reporting on it, which sucks, outside of like maybe a BWP memoir one day. But that, I think, is really the one thing that, even if things seem to improve and vibes improve, is should and might remain a black mark on that 2019 season that really feels needless. But
is that an issue? Especially when you see like the comments on that Instagram post of him posting his goal celebration, and everyone who's ever played with him for the past like 5 years is commenting on that.
Yeah. I don't know why, like, the putative reason given for not renewing him just like doesn't cut it for me. Either way. But I'll say that Kaku to Velo for the first goal on a beautiful third to third diagonal pass is about how you would write it up, isn't it? I mean, that's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, mirrors of their echoes of the NYC, the second goal in that famous NYCFC derby win a couple years ago. Yeah,
and I love the quick one touch pass from Barlow just to get back to Kaku. It was the exact kind of intentionality and awareness of each other on the field that we felt was missing last year.
Yeah,
last
absolutely.
Barlow would have latched on that ball and nervously dribbled to the sideline.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, maybe if he didn't get tackled, if he just got stood up, he would have sat there and frustratingly passed it back to Connor Lade playing left back. So that immediately seems better. What do you think about debut man Pendon?
He looked solid.
Yeah.
If there wasn't a whole lot of room, or not getting the idiom right, but not a whole lot of place to fuck up from how bad Segrist was doing. And he just looked active, just kind of like what you would expect, you know, kind of what we talk about when you get one of those kind of mid-level European players who comes over to MLS, and you can kind of just see that extra little bit of quality in clean touches and like all that kind of stuff, from getting trained at a higher level. And you know, yeah, he looks solid. And you know, kind of a guy with a similar background, Kyle Duncan, you know, looked solid on the other side. He actually, like, weirdly enough, like, I looked at FootMob after the game, and like, even though we won, like every Red Bull player was kind of, you know, around like the 6-7 range, but then Kyle Duncan was like 8.5 or something. So like, whatever, sounds like whatever, like Opta measurements or whatever they had on him, he was like kicking ass on that too. So you know, another encouraging game from Kyle Duncan on the other side of defense as well. And then obviously there was Amro being part of kind of like a new look to the back line, that was you know, very, very productive the other night.
Yeah. And then counter to Amro, I gather that Tim Parker did not have a good 8 to 10 minutes. What's the story there?
Dude can't jump.
It was, I mean, like, he can't jump, and then yeah, it was. I mean, he was only on the field for, you know, about, I don't want to rag on him too much, because there have been already people coming out just being like, oh, like everybody's being too hard on him, which true. It's just a fake little rusty preseason game, but yeah, he was only on the field for about 10 minutes, and it was kind of a calamity. Like, had got beaten on a couple aerial balls. He had one play where he was kind of sweeping up a through ball that came through, and he was indecisive on it and ended up, you know, almost giving, practically like, you know, giving a flick on for Atlanta to score. And yeah, just kind of an unsure performance, but at the same time, as we're kind of like highlighting how bad it was, I will say that it definitely seemed like the sort of shaky performance that comes from a guy who's kind of wounded from and not confident from losing a spot. And as we've kind of talked, like, Tim Parker is sort of a confidence player. The times that he has played well are the times when kind of everything else has been set up and engineered around him, and all he has to do, like, he doesn't have to think as much. He just kind of has to search and destroy. And he's a player who kind of struggles when he has to sort of, you know, kind of become more, you know, his decisions have to become more open-ended, and he has more options for what to do. And yeah, when he's not confident, he will, yeah, make kind of mistakes like that. And I think there was an element of that to what we saw the other night. So for that reason, I'm a little hesitant to rag on him too much. So I'll kind of leave it at that.
Yeah, sure. I just think that, you know, he just very much didn't do, I guess, what he need, like, what the point of him coming on was, which presumably was to, like, shore up the defense for the end of the game. It just became a much more chaotic, in a bad way, for us game after, yeah, he didn't, both him and Shukovsky came on.
Yeah, he didn't destroy, like, kind of, I think, what you're getting at. Like, he wasn't shutting things down. He was very kind of hesitant and letting balls kind of come to him, let players come to him. Whereas, like, we know that, you know, he's at his best when he is kind of active and, you know, eager to go take guys on, and we weren't really seeing that in the brief thing that he did the other night.
I think he nailed it.
I think the bottom line.
I think he nailed it with the idea that, like, you know, he's just the type of player who, like, it would absolutely shake him to lose a starting spot, and he just came in, like, just unprepared. I mean, I don't know how much of that even would play into, like, how his fitness or, like, training had gone, you know, when being apart from the team for so long, which is, I don't want to speculate, I guess, too much into that, but yeah, I think that, like, the Parker can kind of work in the search and destroy, you know, when he has somebody like Aaron Long who's spot on, and he was in 2018, right? So you know, when someone like that isn't there to pick up all the pieces, when you, you know, kind of put yourself out there, it makes it hard to really, you know, I guess do the same thing, you know, looking at what Tim did in 18 and 19. But I guess like you just, you're totally removed from that analysis when you look at like the few minutes he had, early, you know, last week. It was just a totally different version of himself. And I think it was definitely around the self-confidence.
I mean, I think a lot of it's also just the fact that I don't think any of our players play well when we're in a lower block, defending like that. And, you know, like Quark was kind of saying, I don't want to rag on Parker too much because, you know, that's not how anyone plays well on our team.
Yeah, I mean, we did spend all last episode saying, who care, I guess. But, you know, the more the results come in, the more I'm beginning to think this tournament's really important and good, actually.
It's,
I mean, it's more
than legitimate. It's becoming more of an I care tournament.
This stuff about the losing his position,
do care,
or losing his confidence is interesting, because I thought you were going to say that he had the characteristics of being unfit or just away from a pitch for a while. So it would seem interesting that, to me, if he is sort of feeling the pressure, because first two games of the season, it was Long who was out, right? And it stands to figure that this first game, and with all this rotation going, isn't too much of a statement of the first team. I mean, it is mostly the first team who plays, but you also have things like Barlow starting, and I don't really think that anyone is making a serious claim that Barlow has supplanted White or anything. So that could be an interesting tell if that's the case. But I agree that, you know, maybe we can give him a little bit more time, and it is a weird tournament. It does remain interesting, maybe like on the note that we had last season kind of about CJ and the coaching, I don't know why he would still be getting hit, beat in the air, especially with his skill set. And then it does make me think of that old article again about him staying after practice and doing drills with Armis and CJ, that seem to not actually be his problem. I wonder, and I hope that maybe if Patel and Falwell are around to give more technical direction, that stuff improves at least. Maybe that's something that we could hope to evaluate as we play more games this year, even in their limited legitimacy and importance. But
I mean, I think on the flip side, like, we also just saw a great performance from Amro that game. He just kind of was beasting around, making good slide tackles and being very physical with all the attackers. And, you know, I think all of us here have always had a positive opinion of Amro Tarik, and, you know, that putting him in as a starter might not be the worst idea in general.
Yeah. I mean, if we had a younger, like, project CB, like, you know, Fidel Escobar, but good, but reliable. Fidel was good in certain ways. He just was sort of unreliable. I wouldn't have a problem moving on Parker if we could get a buyer. I don't think Nealis is ready to be the third CB, but we do have a decent option there in Amro. I agree.
And you think Parker would have like a pretty decent trade market even after kind of like the fall from grace as far as being like a national team player and all that?
His contract is so heavy though.
Yeah, but I don't, well, it is, but I don't know. I feel like the league is changing more, and especially for like the need for domestic players who are of a That's certain true. Quality. You know, he might still have a market, but I don't know. I feel like he's on like 800, 900 grand, I guess, but like that's not as big as of a contract now as it was even like 2 or 3 years ago in the league. So, I don't know.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell what the contract map was. It about 4 or 5 years ago, you could get a pretty intuitive feel of the budgets, even without you know, whipping out a spreadsheet and literally doing the math. You could kind of figure that each team could afford about 4 or 5 TAM guys, but now it does feel way more
all over the place. Ever since that one summer when the Galaxy like somehow shoved in Ashley Cole, Nigel De Jong, Steven Gerrard, and like one other guy, and like, right. and Zlatan later, and like none of them were DPs at any point, or like all of them spent some time not even being TAM players or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Once that happened, I was like, yeah, okay, I don't really know what's
going on. Zlatan was like technically on like veteran minimum or some shit, like his first year in the league. Like, come on, guys. Like,
but who knows? But so I guess the narrative from the haters is that, you know, we just had one moment of brilliance and then kind of just shit clogged it the rest of the way, either in a good way or a bad way. But, you know, how did we do on that front? We have an amazing 31% possession. You do love to see it. Did that seem intentional? That seemed well executed?
Yeah, it was definitely.
Yeah, I mean, Atlanta never really got their ball. Yeah, Atlanta never really got the ball in our third, you know, or like we were able to keep pressing them back into their half. So, I think it very much felt intentional. They didn't really feel that threatening. We kind of caused a little bit of the chaos that was reminiscent back when we had kind of like Jesse or whatever. So I think that stat is a good one for us.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like less so in the first half, but definitely in the second half, it became clear that we were kind of sitting back and absorbing numbers that Atlanta were sending forward, and they were sending tons forward to the point where like the second they turned the ball over, they only had like two guys back and we had tons of odd man breaks that were stressing them out. And yeah, I mean, I would hesitate to even say it was kind of like the way we looked under Jesse. I think it was a lot more reactive than it was under Jesse. Not that I think that's necessarily a bad thing if it's done well. And it seemed like, yeah, a lot more than I remember us seeing kind of adjusting to sit back and break out on the counter than I have, you know, in the last, you know, few years since we've had, you know, such an obvious and unsubtle, you know, tactical ethos.
Wow. I mean, feels weird. I do feel that my prognosis or prediction of the tournament being totally chaotic is slightly not come true. I mean, it's by the sound of it, it sounds like a lot of games are pretty crappy. But for my money, I mean, it doesn't really seem like there have been like chaotic results. It seems like they're on the whole, the teams you would guess would be better seem to be winning. Would you say that's right?
Yeah, that's fair, probably. Yeah. That's probably the case. I've watched all the games, but that's probably a pretty good way to put how it's gone, rather than it just being, you know, a huge crapshoot like we were semi expecting.
Yeah, which I guess makes sense. I mean, it seems like it's still not great quality play, but I guess quality is somehow shining through. NYCFC have still not won a game since October of last year, which, I've been saying it long. I've been saying it for weeks of this podcast. This tournament is legitimate and it's important. So, all right.
That's you gotta just deal with it, NYC.
They did unfortunately score their first goal.
It was a bit, though. Yeah. Orlando was doing a bit.
Our future final opponents, Orlando.
Yeah, sure. I think we've, in my heart, spiritually, we are already playing in the cup final with Orlando. Whatever happens in the games is immaterial. But I do have to love that, just like in the, you know, in the middle of our game, as we're winning,
everyone just sort of lost their mind a little bit. I mean, I actually, that's not quite true. Coming home, I was having a fairly stressful time. So coming home and just literally posting the words, the Red Bull, like 20 times actually did a lot of good for me. And I have to say, it's the most I've ever sat down to actually go deliberately make images related to the Red Bull or this team in the 4 or 5 years I've been doing this podcast. So really, I can say, the MLS is back tournament, saved my life without exaggeration. Nonetheless, we're playing a game again tomorrow against Columbus.
Well, tonight, or when it comes out, yeah, whatever.
That's true. Against Columbus, they beat Cincinnati 4-0. I guess I'll take it back, because I do think that them beating Cincinnati 4-0 tells us very little, because we don't, you know, it's Cincinnati's first game with their manager. It's still Cincinnati. It's sort of hard to tell if Columbus is the real deal, in my opinion. I don't want to put too much weight on this, but we've got Columbus nonetheless. We've got Caleb Porter in his second year as being their manager. They were terrible last year in a way that actually flew under my radar. I mean, they still beat us because we, of course they did. But they are a retooled team. I only learned yesterday that Federico Higuain is not on the crew anymore, which doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
What do you think we can expect from them? I hear we have inside information about the crew.
In my role as the great guarder of the Red Bull's Vox blogging canon, I was talking to the chieftain of the Columbus tribe about what to expect, and it was basically have some foreign, a lot of like kind of foreign guys who they've signed, a lot of kind of those obscure, backwater league standout guys who end up filtering over towards MLS. A Dutch guy named Yunus Mukhtar, who is kind of an attacking midfielder who is sort of, you know, filling some of the Higuain role, I would imagine. But again, it's the way he put it, because, you know, as we know, the manager before Caleb Porter was Greg Berhalter, now the national team manager, who was known both in Columbus and now with the national team for having a very deliberate and precise possession style. Where players kind of circulate the ball around and move it around and look for space that way. Whereas Porter is known for doing the kind of the same thing, but deploying it more in a way where the players can make their own decisions. And it's a little bit more dribbling intensive and reliant on improvisation in the final third, as opposed to breaking teams open with short passes. So that, I suppose, is the big tactical adjustment that we've seen from Columbus in the last year since Porter has taken over, and it hasn't really resulted in much for them as far as wins and losses, but who knows what we'll see this year now that they've had another little bit of time to, you know, maybe put in some more fitting personnel to that structure.
Mm-hmm. And Porter's been reunited with Darlington Nagbe. He's only 29, which actually kind of,
as well as Fernando Adi.
Is that true?
Yeah, I think they're both on that team. Like, I think he's just reunited his old Portland team.
That's funny, because I if you'd asked me, I would have told you that those guys left Portland partially because they fell out with him and just fell out with the whole club.
Yeah, Nagbe was Nagbe played for him in college too. They go that far back.
Oh, that's right. They're back in Ohio. I mean, right, are they?
Yeah.
Is Porter from Ohio originally?
No.
Are we dealing with some sort of he's from, Ohio?
He's from, he's He's from Indiana.
Production, disgusting.
So Caleb Porter is from Indiana, but his second home is on Hilton Head, so he might as well be from Southern Ohio. He might as well be like a wealthy professional guy from Southern Ohio. Yeah. Apparently, like during his year when he was unemployed, he was living on Hilton Head. But yeah, he's that kind of guy. Which like
the crew is kind of a funny roster too, because they also
bizarre. Isn't Rico Clark there now?
I think he just retired last year, or maybe not. But I think there was like kind of like a deal about how he signed a new contract with them, and it was surprising. I don't know. I'll look it up now. But
Axel Hooberg is there.
Oh wow! Like
obviously Zardes is there. The son of the conspiracy-ridden Greg Berhalter, Sebastian Berhalter, is there, and obviously Derek Etienne is there. It's like it's kind of like a weird version of like Benny Ball team building almost. I'd feel like, you know.
Go ahead.
Hooberg is just such a funny callback to that one random year where Colorado was good, but not really, right? Like, everyone knew that Colorado weren't really good, but
I think Hooberg was good that year.
That was still, like, the defense. That was the year when Gashi like scored all those goals, right?
Yeah, and that was like Howard's first year, right?
I think it might have been, yeah.
And they scored like no goal. I mean, it was like a cheaper imitation of the 2012 earthquake season, which was the points record until us or I don't, yeah, it was the points record until recently. But I feel like with that earthquakes team that were kind of like chaotic and fun, but kind of scrappy, like everyone kind of, they won the Shield, but no one really expected them to win the Cup, and they didn't. And that Colorado team, also a very bizarre team. I feel like everyone knew they were kind of paper tigers, but seeing this guy around and this bizarre spelling just upsets me, making me think about 2015 again. Was that 2015?
I think it might have been. Yeah, I think it was around then. It says on his Wikipedia page that Hooberg's on, he's on loan at San Antonio of USL. But and then also just to update, Ricardo Clark is retired. He retired last year. But yeah.
It's with FTN, which is sort of weird. You know, it would have felt comforting, I think, just to have Etienne kind of be on our roster forever. maybe that's not so much true as it feels so weird the way that like we loaned him out and it failed and that was just the end of it. It feels sort of wasteful and like a shame for like a local product. It felt kind of careless as well, even though Etienne was not necessarily a complete player, and it's unclear if he ever will be, but it's going to be weird to see him in another kit.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. What you're saying about the exit being a little bit, mishandled again. Not to make that a theme of this episode, but yeah,
snake emojis.
Right. That a guy was just kind of like, you know, rather than have sort of like a soft landing and give him kind of like a send off in his hometown, where like, you know, that happens with young players like that, where he comes out of the academy and he has a little bit of a stint with the first team. And then you, for like maybe his last year or so, you could sort of see the writing on the wall that he's not going to become a first team regular and he's going to be moved on. But rather than have him do that little ride out, they did the thing where they shipped him out to Cincinnati, where he clearly wasn't in their plans, and kind of stalled his career for a little bit again. And it was just sort of like, yeah, just not very clear, not a whole lot of sense going on in the technical decisions last year. So, not a great departure, but he's moved on, and I guess we'll have to get used to him in different colors. We'll see if he does any damage. I don't know.
Yeah, it almost makes the Brandon Allen thing look well done. You know, I mean, because Brandon Allen, it felt like, oh yeah, we'll give him a loan, maybe we'll score some goals, and we can sell him on, and it just never really happened. But it felt like we at least loaned him to a team that kind of wanted him. But I guess it's a good problem to have. I mean, again, I guess part of me kind of just still wants to be the kind of club that can hold on to decent local talent that is like can do a job in a pinch, even if they're not going to be world beaters. Now, that remains unclear if that team could have ever become that, but nonetheless. So how do we expect to line up or fare against Columbus? Do you think we can expect, like, I guess the way that some people are framing it is like sort of another duel of philosophy or ideologies, even though I sort of hate the word philosophy in soccer chat. Do you think that that's on point, or do you think it's going to be a little bit more practical than that?
I'm thinking that this game might take on a lot more of the preseason angle than we were saying has been conspicuously absent from some of these games so far. I think this will look more, both because I think we're going to be rotating some guys. I think we might see Parker come back. I think we might see White in the lineup again. I think we might see a few things sort of tweaked around for this game after the other night. And I think a combination of that and Columbus being a team that's still sort of gelling with a lot of new guys, I think we might see a bit more rusty of a game. Definitely not as like as intense and sort of heated of a game as Atlanta got at times, because there's not as much of the rivalry factor there. And even if we did have a quiet burning long-term rivalry with Columbus, but it's definitely not at a flashpoint right now when both teams are sort of at the low point of a rebuild, of a transition. So that sort of, rivalry intensity factor, I don't think will be present. So it'll just be two teams that I think will be still sort of feeling themselves out and be maybe a sloppier game than we saw against Atlanta. And that then we've been surprisingly not been seeing in this MLS is back tournament.
Yeah, I think our boys are, I think our boys just like relatively fit. And when the game happens, I think a lot of these, I don't know, I haven't really watched the Columbus games, or the Columbus Cincinnati game, but I think we'll be able to just hold up pretty well in general. I think we'll line up well against whatever version of Porter Columbus we have, but I don't know. I'm not expecting bad things, I guess.
Yeah. Do you think that we're going to see some, well, I guess really, do you hope? Or do you think or do you hope that we'll see some like forward rotation maybe?
Forward rotation, like Barlow comes off or Boyer comes off, something like that.
Yeah, or maybe a start for Almir. Like, so the last game we had Kaku, Velo, Barlow, and Royer to start, right? And that would leave Omir, who stepped on, White, who reportedly had a knock, and then Jorgensen as the first names off the top of my head. Do you think we should give them a shot, or do you think us winning this game and getting off to winning the hardest game in the group means that all of a sudden we're scheduling and setting up the squad like a slightly more legit tournament, or is it more of an opportunity still to rotate and try out looks?
I think in this case, I feel like Chris is the type of like guy who looks at like Columbus, winning 4-0 and being and seeing that as a challenge. And I think that'll make him, play a majority of the same lineup that came out against Atlanta. I would say that if anything, he'd look to, if rest is an issue, I'd say he'd look to the Cincinnati game next Wednesday as a rotational game. I think the rotation though, I think Britt, you're right, is it's probably up top. you know, it may, might be in that striker role. But I think Omir and Wheel both had very good games off the bench. And warrant, you know, their names are, you know, I think deserve to be in the mix. Although I don't think they'll start. I think they'll go back to, you know, kind of staying as you know, off the bench impact players, at least against Columbus.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think looking at the rest of the squad, I would imagine, I would guess, and I sort of would hope that we just stick to Jensen as number one. I think rotating it around with Mara would probably just make it more confusing. And that really in the midfield, there aren't too many other positions, which we do see a couple minutes from Jared Stroud. How did that go?
I didn't see enough of him necessarily to make any kind of judgments or observations. I don't think it was enough of a sample size, and even in the passages I did see, there wasn't
nothing memorable for better or worse.
Wasn't enough to
evaluate. I don't think he was put into the game to kind of flourish in that attacking role that he otherwise had been doing in with the twos. I mean, it seemed like he was kind of put on late. And he, I don't know. I think Cork, you're right, wasn't particularly memorable.
Yeah. It would be fun to see Edbo.
Yeah, I mean, but like Kyle Duncan really did. A lot of people are just talking about how well he did. And I think that it's not out of convention to just keep a starting lineup for the first two group stages of a tournament like this, right?
Yeah, I could see them trying like keep some continuity in most of the lineup, and then hopefully get a result, and then maybe do some more rotation, kind of give guys some minutes against Cincinnati, right? That's less pressure.
Yeah, that makes sense. Speaking of the midfield, we've been linked with a new midfielder, Drew Yearwood. Is that right? From hot new stuff, Brentford, potential promoted team to the Premier League next year. And he seems to be a central midfielder, right? The kind of more in the mold of like a Caceres or Felipe player rather than an attacking player, right?
Yeah, honestly, like he actually doesn't really have that much footage on sort of the public sources like YouTube and stuff like that. But the limited amount that I have been able to watch, there is kind of like a Caceres vibe to how he plays. He's kind of that deep six player who's sort of hitting deep passes, but can move forward and kind of combine in the final third once the team is put numbers forward. He's kind of the last guy to show up there, and he'll kind of like take shots from deep and stuff like that. So kind of in the Caceres mold in that respect.
Wow, more plans. Who'd have thought that this team would have plans and rumors? Oh, that reminds me, at the top of the show, I guess you mentioned that, you know, how Pendant hadn't gotten any minutes yet. Did the first call with Thelwell kind of make it sound like Pendant was one of his targets? Did it kind of shed any light on that?
I don't know that Pendant came up specifically in the conference. I don't know that he necessarily talked about any signings at all, specifically players wise. More just kind of introducing his, you know, sort of boilerplate philosophy and what he planned to do and what his purview is going to be and what brought him into the job. He did mention that he himself, Thelwell, was brought in by Mitchell and Ragnick personally. I think the circumstances, more so Egbo, I think the circumstances around him and his background and how he came to the team imply that he is a Thelwell signing and a Fernie signing. That I guess there's one sort of connection you can make from Thelwell's press conference was that he mentioned specifically working with Paul Ferney, who is the new New York chief scout, who is an Englishman who had been working in Germany for several years. I think the fact that Edbo being an English player who had been in Germany means that he is somebody who would have been on Fernie's radar, and, you know, just implies that that recruitment, you know, apparatus is already working, and these are guys who they have decided to bring in. So I think just there's enough circumstance around it to imply that, yeah, that Pendant is a Thelwell, Ferney, you know, kind of like new school signing for the team, and him looking good is, you know, obviously a good first sign for that regime.
Nice. Well, weirdly good substantive time, week, to be honest. Don't know how I feel about it, but is there anything else to tackle before we look forward to this Wednesday night cup game against Columbus?
It's going
to
be at like 11. It's going to be fucking wild, but yeah. I guess it's not that late for you, Britt, but yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I'm living out in the past year. Not so bad, but... all right, are we going to win?
No.
All right.
I'm ready for I can already tell, like, and you were sensing it too, that I'm a little uncomfortable with the good vibes. So yeah. I'm ready for maybe a little bit of a come down. It might be an active game. Like I said, I'm expecting it to be a little bit rustier and sloppier than Saturday night. And I can see maybe some goals coming through and maybe like a 2-1 loss. I don't know. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, I can get with that. Like a loss, but like one where like I could see myself getting slightly more annoyed at like there being some sort of like pushback or counterreaction, being like, oh, you guys all got excited for no reason. Or it's like, well, no, I mean, it's still kind of just like a regular loss. I could see some sort of in-between thing like that. But I'm on the same page with that.
I think we'll draw.
Pages them.
Right. I something about this. Yeah, this seems like, I don't know. I think, Cork, you're right to some extent that will, you know, the wind, you know, the wind won't be in our sails in the same way as it was against Atlanta. And I feel like, yeah, a goal maybe. But nothing too bad. I mean, I could see like a 1-1 draw and it's being like a fine game.
Have faith in our team and I have the good vibes. So I'm going to go with like a 2-1 win in contrast to Cork.
One thing is for sure. The Red Bull.
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 All right. Well, any parting thoughts before we let them resume doing COVID for Peach's birthday? I told them to make sure to mention it was for you. When everyone does the soccer, they say, it's for you, Peaches. This is all for you.